Hey everyone, this is Dave Cabin. You can follow me on Twitter at DaveCabinFF. You're listening to the RotoViz AFC West season recap. We'll be discussing all of the teams in the AFC West and looking at the good, the bad, and the ugly of what happened in the division in 2017. For those of you who don't know, RotoViz is a sports data and analytics site that publishes over 1,000 articles per year and has a suite of more than 20 proprietary apps. Go to rotoviz.com to check out the site. And I'm really pumped to be joined by Hassan Rahim, who you may have heard a number of times on RV Radio this season, and if you are a subscriber, you definitely checked out his Buy Low series that he did each week, and he did not disappoint. He did a lot of research for this pod, so I'm really looking forward to talking to him. How's it going, Hassan?
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me on. I'm really excited to record with you on this one. The AFC West is a pretty interesting division, and I'm pretty stoked to get started.
Yeah, so I think that the team that it makes the most sense to start with, and we're going to go down just in order of finishes, so team with the most wins is the Kansas City Chiefs, who we'll start with. What an interesting team this season. You look at the journey this team went on. They came out of the gate firing on all cylinders, smacked the Patriots around the first week of the season. They won the first five games, and they were looking great. Then they went in a massive drought, only winning one game between week 6 and week 13, and then they win out. So obviously we saw Kareem Hunt emerge. Alex Smith became a very fantasy viable quarterback. When you look at this team and what happened in 2017, you know, what are some of the key takeaways for you?
Yeah, first off, I'm kind of bummed to see the Chiefs exit the way they did against the Titans. Taking nothing away from the Titans, the Chiefs' defense was really, really beat up by the end of the year, and they kind of just seemed to have given up. And they, you know, another season and another home loss at Arrowhead inexplicably in the playoffs. And as you mentioned, I think one of the things that really stands out to me is Alex Smith's having an absolute career year in his age 33 season. I do believe that the Chiefs will be moving on from him this offseason. They can cut him and, get a $17 million in savings towards their cap, either cut or trade, I should have said. So Smith is likely, we've probably seen the last of him in KC. Kudos to Alex Smith. He probably had his best season ever as a pro. You know, he completed a career-high 341 passes. His 67.5% completion percentage was the best completion percentage he'd ever posted as a Chief. And he threw for a tick over 4,000 yards. And it was the first time in his career he ever went over 4,000 yards. I believe that there are plenty of QB needy teams that will probably either look to trade for or acquire him, assuming the Chiefs cut him.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the thing too that's interesting too, the 26-5 touchdown interception ratio is going to be pretty interesting. So then obviously the team is going to be going with Mahomes, which I'm sure some people out there will be excited by. Do you have a read on that?
Yeah, I'm actually kind of excited for Mahomes' long-term prospects as a Chief. He graded out pretty well in Rotodoc's quarterback prospect model. He has about the same percentage chance of succeeding as Jared Goff does. And we just saw Jared Goff turn in a stellar season. Mahomes, as we know, was a pretty prolific producer at Texas Tech, but we also got a good look at him in the pros. He played one full game against the Broncos. He completed 22 of his 33 pass attempts for 284 yards. He should have had a TD, but he just slightly missed Demetrius Harris on a play in the end zone, and just missed his fingertips. So the day could have been better for Mahomes, but he looked pretty poised in the pocket. And I think Andy Reid will probably be altering the playbook for him next season. Reid is known to cater to his quarterbacks' talents versus, you know, having them adapt to his system. So I can see them changing this offense from a dink and dunk kind of thing to one where we get to see Mahomes unleash his arm a little bit.
Yeah, I think that will be exciting. And, the offense is going to look largely the same. I think you sent a note over me that Albert Wilson is set to hit free agency. So I think that could impact how that offense is going to look. So with him leaving, do you think that there's any changes in the receiving core that are going to occur as a result of that?
I actually think the Chiefs might go into looking to draft a couple of wide receivers. That's probably the only way they can fit in new receiving talent without really destroying, their cap. currently they're probably, out of all the playoff teams, they definitely have the worst financial situation. So I would look at them and assume that they're going to be drafting a wideout or two, you know, later in 2018. We're still going to see Tyreek Hill behave as their WR1. Tyreek Hill took a bit of a step forward this year. You know, I was pleasantly surprised to see that happen. His average depth of target increased from 8 to 11.6, and he accounted for 21% of the target share. You know, despite seeing a pretty large jump in his ADOT, Hill was very efficient at converting those air yards into receiving yards, and he ended the season with 75 catches for 1,183 yards and 7 TDs. You know, Hill catching 7 TDs, in all honesty, is kind of, it's pretty impressive given that he was not targeted in the red zone fairly often. He only saw 4 red zone targets and 2 red zone carries, and he converted none of those attempts. So he was living on splash plays to account for his touchdown scoring.
That's one of those things that you assume is going to be unsustainable. Now, Hill, though, was very efficient last season, and it looks like, you know, he put up numbers that are a little bit higher than what I would say are normal. Granted, I haven't dug into it yet. So normally when a player does that 3 years, I say they're one of those guys that manages to beat the rule and actually truly be efficient. So it looks like he could be one of those guys. Obviously, he'll still be competing, though, with Kelce for targets, who I'm assuming is going to be their main receiving weapon going forward. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely, because although Hill saw 21% of the targets, Kelce saw 24% of all available targets, and he scored 1,038 yards. I mean, he put up 1,038 yards and 8 TDs. Kelce is also the main receiving weapon that they have in the red zone. Kelce saw 20 red zone targets, and 5 of his TDs came when the Chiefs were inside of the red zone. I would assume that if, you know, with Mahomes under center, they'd probably be looking to get, you know, Kelce in motion a little bit more, use him more like a wide receiver, just try for those splash plays. You know, maybe we actually see him truly like ascend into perennial DE1 status. The coolest part actually about Kelce was, had he been classified as a wide receiver, he would have finished the season as the 10th wide receiver overall. And Tyreek Hill was a WR9 on the season. So just a, you know, pretty fascinating that Alex Smith, of all people, was able to support 2 top 10 wide receivers for all intents and purposes.
True. And it's even more surprising to me that you have a top 5 quarterback. I think in a lot of leagues, Smith was ranked 4. You have a top 5 running back and then a top 5 tight end and a top 10 receiver. Who would have thought, if you go back just a couple of seasons, that the Kansas City Chiefs would have produced this type of offense? Now, the defense did struggle a little bit compared to what some may have expected, but obviously Kareem Hunt was a huge, huge storyline in 2017.
Yeah, and if you were one of those guys who was drafting around the time where, you know, when the Chiefs were about to play their 3rd preseason game before, you know, you probably got a pretty good steep discount on Kareem Hunt. I mean, if you were one of those guys that was lucky to get him around the 8th or 9th, he was probably the MVP of your fantasy season. He posted almost 300 PPR points. And again, after Kelce, he was like one of the most targeted receivers in the red zone. He saw 9 red zone targets, and he converted 6, and he caught 6 balls, and he had 2 TDs, and he just dominated all the rushing work in the red zone as well without Spencer Ware present. You know, we saw Sharkhandrick West steal a little bit of that work from him down the stretch, but really, there's just no way that's going to happen. Again, it was kind of, we got to see West steal a little bit of his receiving work, and we saw West steal some of his red zone work. But really, what I think you're going to see is Hunt is going to just maintain his bell cow role going into next season. And it's possible Ware backs him up, provided he's fully healthy.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I found most interesting about Kareem Hunt is, as I'd mentioned, we saw kind of 3 separate segments to the season for this team. They came out hot, struggled in the middle, and then they finished hot. But if you look at Hunt's splits, so the team won 10 games. In those 10 games, he was averaging 23 PPR points, 20 standard points, and 20 attempts with 4 targets. But then you contrast that with the games that they lost. He averaged only 11 PPR points in those games, 8 standard, 4 targets, and 12 carries. So we did see Hunt kind of go with how the team went. Of course, you could make the argument that the team went with how Hunt went. It's probably somewhere a little bit in between, but I think that that was particularly noteworthy, especially given the fact that I think a lot of people are going to be considering spending a first-round pick on Hunt next season.
Yeah, but the one thing that I will say, though, is Hunt at least has a fairly strong receiving floor. He saw 63 targets last season, and, you know, we're yet to see how this offense will function under Mahomes. You know, maybe that target share for running backs rise up as Mahomes favors throwing to the wide receivers. But again, you know, outside of Hill and Kelsey, there are not many other players that consume a lot of that target share. So we could probably see, you know, maybe a little bit more offensive creativity with Andy Reid and Kareem Hunt if he's got a stronger armed quarterback under center. So it would be interesting to see kind of how Hunt is used next season. And to your point, I do believe that it's a little bit of a chicken and the egg thing there between Hunt and how the team went versus and vice versa.
Right. I think it's a little too early to try to read into that. Given just, you know, that it was his first season, we're going to have a slightly different look with that team next year with Mahomes coming in. And with Andy Reid, you never really know what you can expect given the personnel that he has. So that was the Chiefs. The Los Angeles Chargers ended up winning 9 games, which I think might have fallen in line with some people's expectations. They did have some solid fantasy contributors that went a little bit under the radar till we really saw Keenan Allen come on and eventually finish as the wide receiver 3. What are some of your key takeaways for the Chargers in 2017?
Yeah, I mean, first off, kudos to Keenan Allen. He, you know, like around the draft season, a lot of people were worried about Keenan Allen being injury prone. And, you know, he's basically, you know, he played all 16 games. And not only did he smash that injury prone label, he did so in, you know, just outstanding fashion. He was an absolute target hog. He took up like 27% of all available targets. And he finished as a wide receiver 3 on the season with the 278.2 PPR points. One of the most interesting things about that is that with Allen hogging 27% of the targets, no other wide receiver on this team exceeded 12% of the targets of Philip Rivers' targets.
That is crazy. I mean, Keenan Allen is an absolute monster. I was very happy to see him perform because it's one of those things. We see players sometimes that we know are not only good in real life, we know they can contribute from a fantasy perspective. We know when Allen plays, he gets all those targets. It was just a matter of staying on the field. And when you don't have a random lacerated kidney or another, you know, crazy injury that happens early on, this is what you're going to get from a guy like that. So Philip Rivers was throwing him the ball, and we got another vintage season from Rivers.
Yeah, and the one really cool takeaway from this season with Rivers is, you know, he turned 36, and he is known to be a fairly interception-prone quarterback. He only threw 10 interceptions this last season, and it's the lowest mark since 2009. So, you know, almost a decade later, he's having one of his, you know, his interception rate, you know, rate has just gone down. He still threw for over, you know, 4,500 yards and 28 touchdowns, and it was actually kind of interesting to see his the red zone usage because the aforementioned Keenan Allen was targeted 24 times by Rivers in the red zone. And, you know, 4 of Keenan Allen's TDs came from inside the red zone. So it's, you know, as fantasy gamers, we're not the only ones happy to see Keenan Allen back. It's clear that Philip Rivers is as well.
Yeah, definitely. And it was an interesting passing game, as you said, with Allen just absorbing so much of those targets. Melvin Gordon got involved. And then we really saw Antonio Gates slide away into the twilight of his career and really become a non-factor, and Hunter Henry really becoming the guy. So if we look at that receiving core for next year, what are some of the changes that we might see and what can we expect?
Yeah, so Antonio Gates is set to be a free agent, and that would pretty much make Hunter Henry the everyday TE1. He missed the last game of the season, I believe, with a small laceration in his kidney, and hopefully we're hoping that he's okay and ready in time for OTAs and next season. Hunter Henry is just an absolute stud. I mean, like, when he's been called upon, he's produced this season. He was second on the team in red zone targets, and he caught five of his 12 red zone targets, and he scored three TDs. With Gates set to retire, I believe a larger share of red zone offense will be available for Henry. Gates accounted for 11 red zone targets, and he caught three passes and scored three TDs. So I believe that there's a little bit of, you know, there's a pretty good chance that either Hunter Henry or Keenan Allen improve their, you know, touchdown totals next season, or at least get a higher percentage of the looks going forward.
Yeah, I mean, for a player like Henry, especially at the tight end position, you add in another, be it two touchdowns, and that's moving him up those boards as well. So I'm actually excited about his chances next year. And then obviously, Melvin Gordon was solid, and we also saw Austin Ekeler get involved as well. So in terms of the running game, you know, what are you expecting for next season? Is Gordon still going to be the main guy? Is he going to be the focus?
Yeah, Gordon was the seventh highest scoring player in fantasy football this season with 288.1 PPR points. It, you know, there were times in the middle where it didn't feel like Gordon was particularly good, just rushing the ball, you know, just fairly ineffective, fairly inefficient in rushing. But, you know, he cracked 1,000 yards. He rushed for, you know, 1,105 yards, and he scored 9 touchdowns. And really what kind of buoyed Melvin Gordon's fantasy finishes this season was just how aggressively he was used in the passing game. He saw 83 targets in 2017, which is a significant increase from the 87 he received last season. And he got 58 of those 83 targets for 476 yards and 4 touchdowns. His 83 targets were second most on the team after Keenan Allen. So in a sense, Melvin Gordon played that WR2 role in conjunction with that RB1 role.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, this is one of those shifts that we're seeing is just now running backs coming back and, you know, being involved very heavily in all facets of the game. We're seeing not only the starters get a lot of looks, but in many teams, the backups getting a lot of looks as well. And I think it's interesting to think about, you know, some of these things that we're seeing from these teams when we look ahead to a team like the Oakland Raiders, who struggled by all accounts in 2017. They're bringing in John Gruden. I think a lot of people might be excited about this, but I feel like he's been away from the game for a while as a coach, being able to workshop some of those, you know, different schemes that he might want to try to implement as the league has been evolving. So to me, I'm not as excited given that distance as others might be. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. Per Ian Harties of Fantasy Labs, Gruden didn't coach a single top 10 scoring offense from 2002 to 2008 with the Buccaneers. And he, you know, he had a top, after doing so in 4 of 6 seasons with the Eagles and the Raiders. I'm actually kind of cautiously optimistic that Gruden will help make Derek Carr into at least a better version of the quarterback that we saw this season. I mean, it was a pretty poor season for all the Raiders, but especially Derek Carr, who seemed to take a massive step back. But if you look at RotoDocs using Sabermetrics to project 2017 NFL team wins article, he actually pegged the Raiders as one of the luckiest teams last season. He had them projected for about, he mentioned that in the, per their Pythagorean win theorem, their win formula, the Raiders projected for approximately 4 fewer wins. You know, per the Pythagorean wins, Oakland were the luckiest team in 2016, and they were going to face the toughest schedule in 2017. And as we can see, they just took a massive, massive step back, and RotoDoc nailed it, you know, about a, you know, before the start of the season.
Yeah, that is quite a step back, and it is interesting to see them end up on the other side of the fence there. That is a recipe for disaster, obviously, when you're outplaying expectations and then your schedule gets a whole lot tougher. But in terms of the receiving core, it was really interesting to see how things shook out this year with Crabtree and Cooper. And I believe that we're going to be seeing a slightly different look in terms of the receiving core next season.
Yeah, there was a report from the Las Vegas Review-Journal that mentioned that the Raiders are looking to move on from Michael Crabtree this offseason. You know, and if you look at the contracts, the Raiders can cut Crabtree this offseason and not suffer any hit to their cap. And it's possible, you know, Gruden might just take that route. If he does so, that would open up a pretty sizable target share. Crabtree is accounted for, you know, at least 145 targets in 2015 and 2016, and he saw 101 targets this season. So you're looking at a pretty large target share that will be opened up. I think Crabtree would still be a pretty good performer, regardless of whether he's going to be a Raider next season or if he signs with someone else, because I think he's still got juice in the tank. He's a fairly prolific red zone receiver, as we've seen. He just doesn't drop many balls when he's targeted in the end zone. If this is the last time we see him in black and silver, then good luck, Michael Crabtree, I guess.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that he is the type of guy that, especially from a fantasy perspective, is going to be relevant wherever he goes. And I'm not ready to write off Amari Cooper. Maybe I'm not going to be drafting him as highly as I did last year, but I don't think that we want to write him off or forget about him, especially if he becomes the focal point of that offense. To quote John Gruden, I'll tell you what, I like this guy. I like him.
Yeah, I mean, definitely Cooper would be the biggest beneficiary if Michael Crabtree were to leave. And I agree with you. I think Amari Cooper definitely was the biggest letdown this fantasy season. He certainly sunk, just destroyed. But we got to remember that, you know, before this season, he was averaging 1,110 yards from scrimmage and about 5.5 touchdowns per year. You know, even though he had a down year, he still scored 7 touchdowns. So he's had a career high in touchdowns despite, you know, really having a very, just a atrocious, atrocious season. Ben Gretsch noted in his Stealing Signals column that one of the reasons that Amari possibly had a very poor start to the season was because he was on the injury report every Wednesday, and then he was upgraded to full on Thursday before playing on Sunday. So you're looking at, you know, clearly a player who's undergoing some form of treatment for his bulky knee. He missed a bunch of practice time in August. He, you know, clearly wasn't right. And in the only time he wasn't listed on the Wednesday practice report was before the Week 7 game against the Kansas City Chiefs. You probably remember that. That was where Amari got 11 balls and he scored 200, you know, went off for 210 yards. Yeah.
I do remember that because I was actually recording with Tim Talmadge highlight reel episode while this was going on. And it was the week that I'd finally given up and sat him and I had a meltdown on the air.
Yeah. I actually had to start Amari. The way I built my teams were expecting Amari to go forward. And so I was fairly lucky to have him slotted into my lineup. It was one of the only games I won that season, thanks to the 44 points. So that was cool.
He's nice. Yeah. And then so as far as the running game goes, questionable if Marshawn Lynch is going to be around. He actually was an interesting experiment this year. I think some people felt like he should have been more utilized, especially given the team's struggles. What are your thoughts on that? And, you know, do you like Washington or Rashard to be the feature back there next season?
I really don't know what Gruden is going to do. I know he mentioned that he wanted to talk to Lynch and really kind of get a feel for him, but the Raiders can bring him back next season for only $4 million in salary. So I don't know if they'd cut him for the zero cap, if that $4 million is really worth it or not. You know, again, and like you mentioned, Marshawn Lynch, the biggest issue was his lack of utilization. He only eclipsed 15 carries once in the first 9 weeks, but after week 10, he hit, you know, 15 plus carries in all games except for one, and that was where he really sort of came on really came on as a running back. I think part of that was, you know, Amari was hurt and Crabtree was hurt, and, you know, you're looking at a quarterback who's lost all confidence, so why not have Beast Mode run the ball? He looked pretty good when he was running the ball, but it's a fair question whether or not to bring him back. In that case, if Oakland choose not to draft a running back, I would probably expect Washington to emerge as the kind of the big bruising back with you know, Jalen Richard playing that change of pace, scat back role. Richard's proven to be a pretty capable receiving back. And so I think he'll have a pretty solid next season as a receiver out of the backfield.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that Richard is the guy I would be more focused on. building into my team just because it seems like, you know, there's more likely to be a role that's going to carve out for him that can carry from game to game without having done too much, you know, thinking into this. So that is the Raiders. Anything else that you think was noteworthy before we move on to the Broncos?
Yeah, just a note on Derek Carr. He sort of spent this entire season kind of becoming this dink and dunk game manager specialist. Like, his average yards per attempt were down. He, you know, there were 50 fewer pass attempts this season than any other season. And I know that he missed a game this season, but still, you know, I'm hoping part of it is just him playing through injury. And maybe we see a different Derek Carr under John Gruden, because really, for, you know, any of our predictions, especially for Amari Cooper to go off, you kind of need good quarterback play. And I'm really hoping that Carr is able to take the next step forward with John Gruden, but I'm still kind of cautious over there.
Yeah, well, I need to go back and watch the Gruden quarterback camp with Carr. As you can tell, I love Gruden, and I just can't wait to hear the, I'll tell you what, I like this Derek Carr, man. Pretty good, man. Pretty good. I think I did the impression better that time. I had to work it in the second time. I don't know if I do it good, but I have fun doing it. And I should probably mention that though the season is over, it's still a fantastic time to sign up for a RotoViz NFL Pass, which you can get right now for 30% off. The discount is for listeners of the podcast only, and it's available through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all our NFL content and tools, and best of all, it supports the pod. So be sure to get your 30% discount off an NFL Pass at rotoviz.com/podcast. We're going to close with the Denver Broncos, who had a pretty terrible season, largely due to struggles at the quarterback position, going through three different quarterbacks, none of them really finding success, and the defense just not being able to keep them in games like they may have hoped for, given what we had seen from that defense in years past. Granted, it had a slightly different makeup this season, but the Broncos struggled. So what do you think we can pin? What do we need to point to when we think about the season?
I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. It's just the quarterback play was fairly poor and pretty inconsistent. You know, it's clear that Trevor Siemian or Brock Osweiler, neither of them are the answer, and Paxton Lynch didn't look much better. So, you know, we have to wait and see what approach the Broncos take this offseason. Do they go and draft a quarterback with their first round pick? You know, do they go out and sign a veteran to kickstart this offense? You know, there have been rumors of them trying to court Kirk Cousins or any of the other, you know, free agents. So maybe the aforementioned Alex Smith could find his way to Denver.
I would like that. Just have him throw a bunch of short dink and dunk screens to Demaryius Thomas like they do, and just let DT just rack up the receptions.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, you're looking at, you know, basically both Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders really struggled under this poor QB play. I mean, you know, despite the bad QB play, like, Thomas still had 83 catches for 949 yards and 5 touchdowns. And over the last 3 seasons, DT has accounted for at least a 25% target share. So, you know, again, people are probably going to be kind of off him because of the poor QB play. Maybe his ADP will be a little bit depressed, but I'm going to buy someone who's getting that kind of target share all season. You know, I mean, like, that's just a fantastic value.
Absolutely, especially with that drop off that we're going to see. And we've now seen, even with the poor quarterback play, that he will be relevant and, you know, better than some of those options that you're going to get later. But as far as Emmanuel Sanders goes, he struggled with injuries. I am starting to feel, though, like, you know, it might be a bit of a risky proposition if you're drafting him around where he's been going historically as we move into next season.
Yeah, and I don't know how much we should. I guess it kind of depends on the signal caller, but this was the first time for Sanders as a Bronco where he failed to catch about 1,000 yards receiving. You're still looking at a player who's accounted for 20% of, you know, the targets over in Denver. And if it's age or that's worrying you a little bit, or maybe like the injuries catching up to him, I can see that being a possible worry. But depending on where you're getting him and where his ADP starts to shake out, it would be kind of interesting to grab him as a flyer. Well, I guess it's weird calling Emmanuel Sanders a flyer, but that's what this season has done to us.
Well, I think for me, you know, it's a function of a couple of things, mainly being he is the type of guy that I feel like if the things that he does well and the things that have differentiated him start to slip a little bit, especially with potential for poor quarterback play, it's a real slippery slope for him and he could fall off quickly. But the other side of it too is I think where I might be drafting him, I'd rather take a player that I think has significant upside and could really surprise versus I think Sanders at this point, you know, I don't see him really blowing up. So that's just kind of my thought process there. I don't know, you know, if you agree with that or not.
No, I agree with that. I think that's something that I got to work on as a player this season is think about taking some more risks, you know, towards the middle and the end of the draft, just because, you know, if you're lacking those high volatility outs in your draft selections and you're playing for floor, you're not going to have a very high ceiling on a weekly basis.
Definitely. And I was hoping that some of these unsuspected guys that I could get late were going to come out of the Denver backfield, be it Booker or Jamaal Charles, and it just never really came to fruition. And it's weird because CJ Anderson had some really good spots, but overall, you know, I don't think that he lived up to what I was expecting going into the season, but it's kind of hard to make sense of what this backfield really did.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, this is CJ Anderson's first 1,000-yard season as a Bronco, but he also only scored 3 touchdowns. You know, I mean, you've got a running back dominating the touches and pretty much seeing 3 down work, but he had such little red zone equity that you're really looking at kind of like empty calories almost from the running back slot. Yeah, and so I mean, I guess Jamaal Charles might not be on the Broncos next season, and maybe Devontae Booker would probably be the change of pace back. You know, and I really don't. Again, I'm with you. Like they could cut Anderson for 0 hit to their cap this offseason, but I don't know if they will.
Yeah, and regardless of who comes in, I feel like it might be a bit of a trap. Granted, we could see a complete turnaround, but it's just been so confusing to me, this backfield, that I just, you know, I'm hesitant to really buy into anybody there just yet. And I think it's an interesting point that he had the first 1,000-yard season, but it was relatively quiet despite a couple of big games. So are there any other players in that offense, you know, that could emerge next year that we haven't mentioned yet, you know, maybe for a dynasty league or just other guys to keep our eyes on as we start thinking about 2018?
Absolutely. I think both Carlos Henderson and Jake Butt are guys you should be stashing for next season, if you play in a dynasty league or maybe taking his late round flyers. Henderson, you know, pretty much missed his rookie season due to injury, which is a bit of a bummer because he was projected to be their starting slot wide receiver. And Jake Butt was supposed to take over tight end duties. He was a fairly strong tight end prospect out of Michigan, missed all the entire season because of his ACL tear. But given the poor play that Denver has had at the tight end slot, I don't think he's got a very tough road ahead to seeing productive play time for the Broncos next season.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. So real quick, I'm going to ask you just a couple of rapid fire questions here. Which of these teams surprised you the most this season, be it that they played well or that they played poorly?
It definitely had to be Oakland, only because they felt we anticipated them to regress, but we didn't anticipate them to take such a steep step backwards. You know, you've seen the entire coaching staff turnover, and with that, you know, with such a big turn shake up in the front office and in the coaching staff, you know, you've got questions. I feel like Derek Carr might actually be on notice this season. If he can't pick up the Gruden offense, they can cut Carr for, you know, a $7.5 million hit to their cap, and they could probably start, you know, looking at the entire team anew because they gave Gruden a 10-year contract. And, you know, you're looking at someone who's looking to really stamp his legacy on this team and probably will want to analyze every facet of what they have.
Definitely. And the Raiders, it's going to be interesting to see what develops as we head into next season. Now, the one other thing I want to ask you before we wrap up is the Chiefs. We, as we mentioned, it was kind of an odd journey for that team. It was odd the way that things played out throughout the season on a number of different levels. And even though they struggled in the middle of the season, you know, had a rough go of it in that that first playoff game that they had, getting eliminated by the Titans, we still saw a lot of fantasy relevant players. Do you think, from a fantasy perspective, that they're going to be able to contribute that many, you know, top level players next season? Or is this one of those things that it's going to have to kind of regress somewhat, kind of like we saw the Falcons do as we transitioned from 2016 into 2017?
I mean, we're kind of always, you know, with a new quarterback taking over, there's always going to be question marks. We know Reed is a pretty effective signal caller, and we do know that he does change the offense to fit the strengths of his quarterback. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Reed transitions his offense over to Patrick Mahomes. But from a fantasy relevant perspective, I guess some of that comes down to whether or not the defense is particularly good, right? Like if this defense continues being this massive sieve and just keeps giving up points, it's conceivable that, you know, Mahomes and the Chiefs are going to have to be a little bit more aggressive on offense to make up for all the points they're giving up. So you could be seeing a lot of fantasy goodness out of this team, even if their final record isn't particularly great. And I guess that kind of comes down to what they do this offseason. Their cap is fairly poor, so they're a team that we should definitely be tracking very closely this offseason.
Yeah, I definitely will. And I think that for me, watching Kareem Hunt, how he starts off next season, is going to be one of the most interesting storylines. So just a division that was very interesting this season. Things did not play out as we might have expected, and a lot of uncertainty, but a lot of interesting things to pay attention to as we move into next season. So Hassan, as always, man, thanks for coming on. It was great talking with you. I know you're going to be doing a couple more recaps, and I will as well, so we'll stay tuned for that. But anyways, that is going to do it for the AFC West season recap episode. I'm Dave Caban. You can find me on Twitter at DaveCabanFF. My co-host on today's episode was Hassan Rahim, who you can find on Twitter at HRR5010. And that is going to do it. So make sure that you check out the rest of our recap series. And thanks for tuning in. Thank you for listening to the RotoViz Recap Series. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio Podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.